Hello, and welcome to Classy Coders, a podcast where computer science educators and technology professionals come together to explore the present and future of computer science education. Join us as industry leaders share insights on the most in-demand skills shaping the workforce, while educators reveal how they're equipping students to meet these challenges head-on. Together, we'll bridge the gap between classrooms and careers, preparing the next generation for a tech-driven world. In this episode, we're taking a deep dive into accessibility, creativity, and confidence building in computer science education. This month, I'm sitting down with two incredible guests, Denise Orndorff, an instructional technology coach from Frederick County Public Schools, and Dora Palfy, co-founder and CEO of Imagi, an edtech company on a mission to make coding fun, inclusive, and accessible for all students. You'll hear how Imagi is creating tools that not only engage students through visual creative coding, but also empower teachers, regardless of their technical background, to confidently bring computer science into the classroom. Denise shares powerful stories from her own experience using Imagi, from working with nonverbal kindergartners to helping middle schoolers with special education needs retain coding skills over the summer. We'll also explore what accessibility really means in a computer science context, from navigating the digital divide to embracing unplugged activities, and how Imagi is helping to bridge those gaps. Plus, you'll learn all about their new AI-powered debugging buddy, designed to support students as they troubleshoot their code, and how hands-on learning leads to those unforgettable wow moments. Whether you're a seasoned computer science educator or just dipping your toes into tech, this conversation is packed with insights, inspiration, and practical ideas to help make computer science more approachable and impactful for every learner. This is Classy Coders. Hello and welcome to another episode of Classy Coders. Today with us we have Denise Orndorff and Dora Palfy. Welcome to you both. Hello.
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 Hi. So let's get a few quick introductions just so that our listeners know who they're talking to, And Dora, would you go first? You're to my immediate right on this little screen here. Please give us a little bit about like Imagi, a little bit about yourself, and just tell us who we're listening to.
Yes, thank you. So, hi, everyone. I'm Dora, and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Imagi. We are an edtech company, and our contribution to the edtech space is a tool that makes it fun and inclusive and accessible to learn and teach computer science. We're really hoping to sort of like bridge the gap between how quickly tech is developing and changing and how much we are kind of giving that knowledge over to students in our educational system. And so making sure that every single child, regardless of their background, has the ability to learn those skills that will be essential to not just consume technology, but actually like contribute to a technology-shaped future and you know, create with technology.
That's a really great mission. That's definitely aligned a lot with what CodeVA, Code Virginia does. And so we're super excited to have you here to chat with us. And then Denise, you've worked with some Imagi products and have met and talked and spoken with Dora before. Give us a little bit about yourself, please.
I'm Denise Orndorff, and I'm an instructional technology coach for Frederick County Public Schools in Virginia, in Winchester. And we have had the pleasure to work with Adora on several occasions using the Imagi program and the Imagi charms, and our students have really enjoyed them, and they've helped us to integrate some of our computer science standards that we're trying to address in our curriculum.
Awesome. So again, definitely connecting with Code Virginia's mission of, you know, sort of integrating computer science into schools all across the state of Virginia. We also help write those standards of learning for computer science. And so we love talking to two people who are passionate about those computer science standards as well. So I will jump into these questions. This first one's great, accessibility. Both of you are making computer science more accessible. Denise through curriculum integration and Dora through tools Imagi. And how do you define accessibility in computer science education? And what does that look like in practice? Whoever wants to take it off.
Okay. For me, it's having everyone exposed as far as the accessibility to it. I want all of our students, regardless of their backgrounds or their ability, to be able to engage and succeed in coding. And there's a lot of different ways, not just Imagi, that we can reach the accessibility, as simple as unplugged coding activities. So it's not even really a device itself. It's an unplugged activity that's paper and pencil. I've used BeBots with my K-2 kiddos and even higher, just giving them a way to understand if I'm doing up, up, left, right, I'm actually doing an algorithm. You know, I'm sequencing it to move. When you go into Scratch, or Scratch Junior is what I've used with some of my students, I can make it unplugged by giving them the coding blocks and they can lay them on the table. With Imagi, once they understand that Python code of M equals and they put in their where they want their color and things to go, they just roll with it. And I think the thing that I like the most about computer science is, one, we're giving accessibility to all of our students in our classrooms. We want all of our students to succeed and be able to do it. But in my background and working with it, sometimes it's amazing because the students that may be struggling in reading, maybe struggling in math, school just isn't their thing. You turn on to coding or you put something like this in their hands and all of a sudden they're the teacher and they're the one succeeding in the classroom. And when that happens, it's awesome to see.
Yes. So, I mean, accessibility, of course, comes in many different shapes. And unfortunately, I can't say that, like, we cover everything, you know, from visually impaired and all sorts of abilities. But we start with a vision and, you know, expanding on what we can be inclusive of with our tool. And so my background and my research initially, for example, focused on girls. How can we engage girls more with computer science? And that's how the whole idea of creating art with code emerged. It came directly from girls. And kind of built on top of that, we created Imagi, which, of course, works for boys and girls equally. They all benefit from the creativity combined with coding. And then when it comes to sort of like access to computer science, what I have realized as I started working with educators is, of course, in a big part about empowering and supporting educators to be able to deliver a really quality experience to their students in the classroom. And so, for example, what Denise mentioned about unplugged activities, that's something that wasn't part of like our initial curriculum, but it was feedback that came from educators like Denise and others as well. And so, for example, in the new curriculum that we launched, we have unplugged activities for almost every lesson. So I think for me, like access, in a big part comes down to, you know, listening to the educators who are using these tools and really understanding like how can we make it as seamless and as easy as possible. And especially, you know, when you're talking about technology, it can be sometimes challenging because someone's computer is not going to work, or the booth is not going to work, or, you know, the IT department decided to block our website or part of it in the district. True story. So, you know, right. But you're doing your best because really, like, you need to make sure that this is something that's actually like supporting educators and not putting extra burden, because that's how you can ensure that all students can actually benefit from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really good point. I mean, accessibility has so many different layers and levels to it. I mean, that word encompasses so many different concepts and ideals. You know, I mean, you're talking about physical, like, disability accessibility for people with low-level vision or potentially, you know, like, deaf customers or things like that. And I do find it interesting that, like, your device addresses accessibility through, like, you have a device, but then you also have the sort of the online version, where I think Denise was telling me about this, or maybe it was you, Dora, you've got this, the Imagi device. Would you remind me of its name?
The Imagi Charm.
The Imagi Charm, yes, the Imagi Charm, which has an LED array on it. And I was just really fascinated to hear from Denise that, you know, even if you can't purchase the Imagi Charm, you can go to your website and code and learn how to code and use that same sort of LED array, but it's a digital version. And it's those things that sort of lower the obstacles, or, you know, it creates more accessibility on, you know, just in general to access this ability to code. And then also connecting it to art creates this personal connection in the students. And a lot of the themes and through lines of this podcast in the last few episodes have been about how vital it is and how much more learning occurs when a student is able to attach their curiosity to something, their natural inherent curiosity. And I just think that Imagi has that at the sort of the forefront of their mission, which I find really, really inspiring and powerful for our students, for your students, for Virginia's students. It's a really cool thing to hear. So yeah, I'll thank you both for that. I think it's really, again, inspiring to hear those sorts of things, especially directly from the people who are doing the work. You're both building confidence in students and in teachers who may not see themselves as tech people. Sort of both touched on that. There's a little bit of trepidation, especially when it comes to learning coding. You know, there's a ton of coding languages. You're not necessarily sure where to start. The sort of barrier to entry feels very high, especially for teachers and for students. Again, that's another theme that we've touched on a couple of times in the podcast. What do you see, or what have you seen in terms of, you know, practical examples or real world examples of shifting that mindset? Was there a time when you were talking to an educator and you introduced them to it and 5 minutes later they were incredibly excited? Or maybe it took, you know, a couple of times of exposure or maybe framing it a different way. Is there any sort of real world stories or experiences that you might be able to talk about in terms of shifting that mindset from somebody who sees themselves as not a tech person?
Dora, I'll let you start for this one.
Okay. So, well, I think Denise will be able to tell us more about sort of the Frederick County case study, but I think with my experience, for example, in Frederick County, what I was really impressed by is that they actually found Imagi on their own and started experimenting with it. And even though, you know, I know I specifically spoke with Chelsea, for example, Denise's colleague, and she comes from an English teaching background and becoming like a tech coach. And then she picked up Imagi. And then by the time we got involved, like you all have like taught each other how to do computer science or coding. Which to me was really impressive. And I think what I often see is like, it's really not about like knowing coding, but just simply having and modeling an open mindset and like believing that, you know, you can also learn, which is so important to also show the students. So I've seen that time and time again. We have like an English teacher who's actually using Imagi in her classroom because her story was that she's been really frustrated with how little proofreading her students do. And so she was like, I'm going to make them code in like a script-based coding language, Python, where like every punctuation matters so that they will get used to, you know, paying attention to the details. But then she got really excited about it and got really into it. So now she keeps this unit and actually teaches coding with Imagi. Or I guess the other like really fun and successful examples I've seen is that's also like giving us more and more ideas. It's just that like integration piece. So because Imagi is so visual, you can create a lot of different projects. And so be that like coding flags that, you know, of different countries, that is a really good way of like learning about certain computer science concepts, but it's also a good way to learn about different countries. Or we've had teachers like work, you know, with science and like code the lunar phases or the elements of the periodic table. And so we have a lot of stories of educators who come from different backgrounds, but just kind of like have that open mindset, that curiosity, and really modeling for their students that, you know, they are also new to this and learning alongside them. And so I really love hearing that and seeing that. And oftentimes this happens on educators' own initiative. But I think, what I have seen being most successful on a scale with Imagi is like being able to provide not necessarily like a full professional development session, but even just a hands-on session. And so like, you know, educators can like have that 5-minute experience and then actually creating some of their first coding projects. I think that really breaks the ice. And then you see that, okay, I can do this. So I think for us, kind of like, we call this like the wow moment. And especially with the Imagicharm, like, you know, bringing your first project to life. And then it's a true dopamine boost. And that works for kids, but it also works for adults. I think like getting to that wow moment and that like positive reinforcement cycle quickly has been really key in allowing, you know, educators to build up the confidence that they can advance in their own computer science journey.
Yeah, for me, just trying to get the mind shift of teachers, and Alan and I sort of talked about this a little the other day on the call, that, you know, our teachers have a lot on their plates. And to add one more scoop of something is hard. So I always try to find fun ways in PDs when I'm, you know, working with them, like, okay, let me just show you this 5-minute little thing. Get them a little comfortable. The biggest thing in their mindset that I need them to overcome is giving up the control, letting students take control of their learning. And many times when I have worked with my kiddos with the Imagi, like, we'll get through the first lesson and how they're supposed to use coding. And then the next thing I know, they're like, okay, I'm ready to change colors. I want it to blink. So they're 6 and 7 lessons deep into Imagi, just trying to figure it out on their own. Like, the interest has been sparked and they're running with it. And these are kids that normally aren't sparked by much in education. So for them to be able, for the teachers to give up that control and then allow, you know, those students to just learn and explore on themselves. And it's like Dora said, those wow moments, you know, you look over and you're like, how did you do that? Oh, well, you just click here and you go there and you type, you know. But teachers have to be willing to give up that control. If you have a teacher, and I will say the lesson plans that Imagi and Dora have put together are super, super simple for educators to follow, which is also a plus when I'm showing teachers something. They don't have time to sit and create the slideshow that goes with it or create the examples to go with it. And Dora and them have all of those resources ready for teachers. So they can start with, but if you're a teacher that's going to want it to be scripted, it's going to be hard because your kids are going to want to roll a little faster than you're going to want to script it once the enthusiasm spreads through the classroom. But giving up that control and just letting them have it.
No, that's awesome. Yeah. To try and transition that from letting them take control. It's what an interesting problem to have, you know, with students, that they're so unafraid to break things in the digital space, as I would call it. You know, they're just the command Z, you know, generation. Maybe it's like, I'll just undo it. And it's like, great. That's exactly how you should be approaching this. Like, let's just make changes, learn through doing. It's a fascinating thing to watch, but it can cause a lot of trepidation from, you know, if you're not used to that. And I love the idea about the positive reinforcement cycle, especially with teachers, is getting them to that first positive reinforcement, you know, dopamine hit as quickly as possible, because that is something that I have also seen and experienced, I should say, from a coding standpoint, as I did a little bit of, you know, self-education in terms of coding. And there are very few feelings like slogging through a debugging process, you know, getting an error message and trying to figure, Googling to try and find the answer until you get that one little line of code that fixes the problem. And it's just this, you know, feeling of instant relief that just washes over you. It's a fascinating thing that we get so wrapped up in the emotions of coding, because it feels like I should just be able to talk to this machine.
Although, to be honest, now that's kind of where we're going. And I recently visited another school that uses Imagi and actually talked to the fourth graders. And we have a feature in Imagi called the debugging buddy. And so that's like an AI-powered feature, which essentially like tells you why your code is not working. And it was so sweet. This fourth grader, she was telling me, you know, sometimes when a teacher is busy, I'm just talking to the debugging buddy to figure out, you know, why it's not working. And then she was so sweet, kind of like explaining it. But it doesn't tell me the problem. So I also like have to like kind of like learn the hard way, because it only gives me like half of the solution. So anyways, I guess there is a lot of potential now with new technologies and kind of like using that. Again, the idea here is to like remove the burden from the teacher. You know, you can't necessarily give like special attention to every single student and their error messages. So that's like sort of like a teacher assistant that way.
Yeah, I mean, there's a big difference between an adult teaching themselves how to code and a student, learning to code. I mean, there's a lot of, self-reliance and self, searching out of resources that it just comes inherently as an adult of like, I'm alone here, I don't necessarily have a teacher. Whereas, and then some people like me, I'm learning Japanese in my spare time, and I meet with a teacher who lives in Tokyo every 2 weeks because it's like I want to make sure that I'm pronouncing, that things correctly. I want to get extra understanding about the grammar and parts of it and things like that. So, I mean, I think there will always be sort of room for, that sort of self-motivated resource finding, assisted resource finding. And, I'll be interested to see the generation of AI that comes that is easily able to fix programming, error messages and things like that. I think that it can a lot of the times. It's not quite there yet. And so I'm excited. I don't know of any AI tool that's perfect when it comes to, error reporting and fixing yet. And so yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that gets used in the future, what that model looks like, and how often it gets integrated into schools, into adult learning, into self-motivated learning, all those things. I think that's a great tool. It's fascinating.
And the debugging tool is nice too, because one of the other mind shifts that you have to change with teachers is it's okay that we don't have all the answers. So some of them are fearful to try Imagi because I've never done this before. What if I get in here and I don't understand it? Learning with the students along the way is a good way to explain it. And we're not always going to have the answers. And it's okay if we don't have the answers right away. So letting them have a little bit of success, but along the way of your successes, you're going to have some failures and you're going to learn from those too. So.
Right. And again, that's a great call out for not only teachers but students as well. I mean, it's hard to ask teachers to put themselves in that position because it is so uncommon for them to be in a position where they are, specifically have to say, I don't know the answer, and we're both going to have to go figure it out together. When you're explaining the layers of the Earth's crust, there's very rarely going to be like, I'm not sure, I don't know what that layer is called or something like that. This is known knowledge, versus a customized coding project. It does create the sort of unique circumstances where it's almost more helpful for a teacher to say, I don't know, because again, it models, like Dora was saying, that case where a student is going to encounter errors in their code. It's not going to run. They're not going to know how to fix it. This is inevitable. It will happen. And so, again, having a teacher model that experience might make it less scary for kids to say that they're having problems, or, it might make them less, emotional about running into an obstacle because it's just part of the process. And that's, again, something we try and teach at Code Virginia is that it's just inherent to the process. It's as sooner you accept it, the easier it is to work through it. But it can be very frustrating, and I do know that for sure from firsthand experience. That we've sort of touched on this again, but there is a lot of power in storytelling, sort of like we're a little bit of what we were just talking about. Denise, you shared a story with me of where computer science helped a nonverbal student help to express understanding. And then, I would love it if you would maybe recount that story a little bit. And then, Dora, are there moments from the classroom where you've seen Imagi help a student break through or be seen in a new way? But Denise, would you tell us about that story? It was such a good one.
I get to work with kindergartners usually at least once a month, sometimes twice a month as a station rotation during like their literacy time. I'll be one of the stations, and we'll work on BBots. So BBots, so if you're not familiar with them, are just a little tiny bee that has the directional arrows on there, and then I create mats, and we have a starting point, and let's say we're practicing identifying our numbers 11 through 30 because that was a skill that we were working on. So I may say, where's number 29? And they'll point to it, and we need to get the bee from the start to the number 29. So I have cards made up that have the arrows they'll lay down to make their code, and then they'll code the robot. And in the process, in two different classrooms, I have two nonverbal students who have yet to speak. I've yet to hear anything out of either one of them. But because I had the color-coded cards, I'd put each one of the cards in front of them, and they were pointing to the direction that they wanted it to go, and we could add it to the coding poster. So academically, they understood the program completely. It was just me finding some sort of process for them to tell me, okay, I want it to go straight, and they would point to the blue arrow, and we knew to add a blue arrow to it. And then they were able to program and continue in the rotation just like the other students by using those cards. So, but it's nice to see that it doesn't have to be, and it's not ever going to be one size fits all, that we have to adjust and do some differentiation. But this way they could all participate and were able to code the B to go where he needed to go. So.
That's such a cool example. That's such an amazing just like illustration of, you know, like a nonverbal student's capacity for learning and how with a small modification, you are able to provide them the exact same lesson, the exact same standards, the exact same learning with a small modification or accommodation. And I just, you know, I'm getting a little teary-eyed just because that's my jam. So very excited.
I understand.
Dora, do you have any?
I mean, even with a Magi, you could easily take like a science board and you could have the beginning of that coding line that they need and have the Velcro cards that would have, you know, 1 through 9 on it. They could have the letters for the colors and like they could use Velcro and create that line of code. And then they could type it in, or you could have a buddy, or you could type it in. But giving them access to the curriculum in other ways other than just on their screen. So,
I was just thinking, I think there's like one story I remember, which was more, I think about like an English language learner student who wasn't like really engaged in her classes and like in computer science or STEM and specifically, and I think it also really resonated with me because I didn't introduce myself that way, but I was born in Hungary. I grew up in Hungary, and Hungary is very strong in like math and science education, but I only started learning English when I was 15. And when I got a scholarship to study at NYU, which was amazing, but and my English was fine, but I never did like, you know, I never studied other subjects in English. And I remember like when I did my math placement test, and there were a couple of words that I didn't know, but then I was like, okay, what can it be, right? Like, it's mostly just numbers, so it wasn't like really hard to figure out. And I think like this story like resonated with me because our tool, I mean, of course, in our lesson plans we have a lot of language, but at the end of the day, it's so much just like visual. And if you look at the code that someone else has created and see their visual output, you can really figure out without much language because it's all just numbers and characters. And so in this case, you know, an English language learner was just really, you know, finally something like clicked and became extremely engaged with the course because they incorporated Imagi. And so, you know, that's something that like I personally could also relate to because, yeah, like if you have a love or interest or just seeing numbers, that really can transcend the language barriers as well.
Hey, Classy Coders listeners. Looking for a fun and screen-free way to introduce kids to the world of computer science? Say hello to Megabytes, the brand new magazine from Code Virginia, created just for curious young minds across Virginia. Each issue is packed with puzzles, games, comics, and hands-on unplugged activities that help kids build real computer science skills, like algorithmic thinking, problem solving, and decomposition. No screens required. Whether they're cracking secret codes or thinking like a programmer while navigating a maze, Megabytes makes CS fun, accessible, and a little bit magical. But that's not all. Inside Megabytes, kids meet real-life heroes working in computer science, the programmers, creators, and tech changemakers who are solving real-world problems with code. And in future issues, we'll be spotlighting student coders from across the state who are already making an impact. Oh, and did we mention the superheroes? Every issue features a cast of characters who use computer science to save the day and show readers how tech can be a force for good. And don't forget to flip to the back. There's a social media contest where kids can submit pictures of places where they see computer science in action. Megabytes is perfect for classrooms, after-school programs, or rainy afternoons at home. It's like Highlights, but for the tech-savvy explorer of today. Want to get your hands on the first issue? Visit codevirginia.org/megabytes to subscribe or purchase a copy for your home, school, or club. Megabytes, where kids code with their minds, not just their screens.
No, I was just going to say it sort of piggybacks when Dora visited the first time with four of our middle schoolers. And they were there at the beginning of the school year, and the students hadn't used it since like March, April, and they've been gone all summer. Like they're special. They all have some sort of special ed disability. But I mean, months had passed and two of those students sat down and just immediately started entering the code like we had just done it the day before. So for them to be able to retain and know, that was like another wow moment. Like this was one of those hands-on activities that they were able to stick with and learn from. And even months later, being able to continue to code and just run with it. So, but it was nice to see that when the Wendor and them visited the first time to Frederick County.
That's maybe, yeah. I mean, that
put them on the spot.
We did put them on the spot that day.
Sounds like they rose to the occasion. That's awesome. I mean, that retention is absolutely mind blowing. You know, from an educational perspective, you know, putting down something for months, you know, there's not a lot of things that I can imagine if I just dropped for 2 or 3 months that I would be able to like click back into that quickly. So that's really, yeah, that's such an inspiring story. And then the English language learner story reminded me of something from our last episode of how we were talking about allowing students to have agency with their learning, which is something that both of you are clearly, you know, like prioritize. And then versus there's sort of always this unspoken argument to be made of like, why don't you just put them in front of a YouTube, you know, educational, like this is how you build this kind of app in Python or something like that. And how the argument was that why not just put kids in front of an educational platform like that? And it just completely breaks down as soon as any child encounters any sort of barrier, any sort of like language that they might not understand, any sort of problem or issue with their code, especially if they're trying to teach themselves, especially as a student. And so it's really heartening to hear from educators who say, you need to teach these foundational things. You need to be able to make accommodations. You need to have lessons that are structured yet loose enough that a student can take what they've learned and then run with it and do something new with it, as opposed to just this sort of list filling in bubbles of putting them on a track. And so I just, that both the language learning, you know, story and the nonverbal story really bring that home for me, at least, in understanding that I don't think there is a standard student, you know, that exists. There is not this sort of standardized knowledge that we can hope that students just come with, and we can put them on this track and we can put them in front of this video series and they're just going to figure it out as they go. It is inherent in this educational arena, especially in elementary, especially in middle and some of high school, where you need to be involved. I mean, you have to, you know, be shepherding them through this process. And I applaud you both for doing that. So thank you.
I don't know if you're familiar with this book called, what is the book actually called? I need to think about it. Is it The Lifelong Kindergarten? No. Let me actually look it up. That's what it is. Okay. So I love the book Lifelong Kindergarten, which was written by Mitch Resnick, who's the creator of Scratch. And, you know, I think we really like refer a lot to Scratch and kind of think of Imagi as a step after Scratch, but sort of like honoring very similar principles, like the passion, the projects, peers. And so there's also something that they say, which is essentially having low floor, high ceiling, but also like wide walls. And so the whole idea that like you can create personally meaningful projects. So when you talk about every student like learns differently. And I think like one of the best ways to like cater to that is actually by like just allowing creativity and allowing these like wide walls so that you can at every step of the way, like, you know, come up with something that like you personally find meaningful and motivating. And my background is I studied neuroscience in college, so I think a lot about, you know, like how people learn, like why they learn, where is the motivation coming from, right? Like every time you have something that's like meaningful to you, you're so much more motivated to learn and and actually it doesn't even feel like learning. You know, it feels more like fun when you're engaging in an activity that's personally meaningful. So I think, yeah, sort of like that's the idea here, that you can't just like have like a one size fits all solution. But if you can kind of like have something inherent that opens up opportunities for students to, yeah, choose the way in which they will learn, or yeah, how they apply that knowledge, then you can really, yeah, have better engagement across the spectrum of all students.
I think we're all like very much aligned on that, which is really, really great. Thank you for being, you know, part of the Code VA family and, you know, approaching teaching with that, because that is exactly how we feel in, you know, sort of engaging students and making sure that they have agency in how they learn and what they're doing with their learning.
That's a wrap for this episode of Classy Coders. A huge thank you to Denise Orndorff and Dora Palfi for sharing their insights, stories, and passion for making computer science more inclusive, creative, and empowering for all learners. From tactile tools to AI-powered debugging buddies, it's clear that CS education is evolving in exciting, student-centered ways. And if you loved hearing about those wow moments in the classroom, you won't want